there was an interesting comment from Nazem Kadri after the game as well. And I think maybe it's something we sort of need to remember about this team as we inch closer to the deadline. And I don't know who asked him the question, but essentially Nazem Kadri's response was, look, at the end of the day, the strength of this team is our depth. And, you know, we look at the Leafs team and we go, you might like a little more help in the back end, probably not heavy enough up front, you know, may lack a little bit of sandpaper, all that good stuff. They have an amazing tendency to get too offensive, get out shot 5-5, all that great stuff. But at the end of the day, maybe the thing Leafs fans have to hang their hat on is this team has an awful lot of depth and has a lot of guys like Andreas Johnsson and Connor Brown that you can move up and down, in and out, shift them around. It's got some defensemen who are useful, guys like Travis Dermott. You can play with different pairings. Morgan Rielly now shifting to the other side. Maybe we need to remember that the one real strength of this team, Mike, is its depth.
Yeah, Jeff, and thanks for having me on. Good morning, everyone. And no, I think that's a very fair comment. And first of all, when we talk about, you know, the Leafs were on their toes a little bit at the beginning of the game and they were outshot. I mean, let's take a little bit of a time out for all the people that look at that and criticize it, because what were we, 48 hours before that? How many shots did they have in New York? 55?
Like, yeah.
So how quickly people forget, okay? But no, I think you make a great point. I mean, the depth on this team, the secondary scoring, as great as Matthews was last night, what I took out of the game is the fact that, hey, Nazem Kadri is back on the score sheet. And, you know, whether it be on the power play, whether it be 5-on-5, he's one of the key guys. I mean, you know, Tavares has kept scoring. You expect stuff from Matthews and Marner. But, you know, and to Kadri's point, Jeff, and this is something that we talked about at the beginning of the season and has kind of gotten lost a little bit, but Nazem Kadri is your third-line center. How many teams can boast that? So, and like you said, all these interchangeable parts, Johnsson, I know people are frustrated a little bit with William Nylander, but there's no doubt that the talent's there. And look, if April is the time that he busts out, nobody's going to be talking about how much his inconsistencies during the regular season. So yeah, I think that that's one thing about this team, is that from a night to night basis, you got a lot of guys that have the potential to produce.
What do you make of the changes the Leafs have made in the power play? I don't know if you'd call them structural changes. I don't know if it's attitude changes. But look, it's pretty clear. I mean, Sunday night, I watched that, and I think we all watched that and just came away shaking our heads. How do you not? 27 shots on goal, 23 shots on goal, whatever it was in a power play. It doesn't matter who you are. You're going to get some goals. I mean, you should be able to get goals with your fourth liners out there doing that. That didn't happen. What differences did you see in that game and last night that explained this turnaround in the power play?
Well, the one thing, Jeff, and I know they talked about this after the victory in Montreal on Saturday night, is, you know, they became too predictable. That seam pass across from the near boards across to the guy that's at the bottom of the opposite circle. Teams had sniffed that out. They were ready. They're waiting for that. They're ready for that. And you know, too many times that pass, which seemed to be ill-conceived from its origin, would get gobbled up by the opposition. Possession would change, and down the ice it went. I think they've simplified things. I think they've told their guys, look at, you know, especially from the point, if you've got a chance, get the puck to the net as quick as you can. You don't have to blast it. You don't have to look for that perfect pass so that you can be in the highlights the next day. Just get it towards the front of the net. And I think they've, for lack of a better term, uglied it up. And I think that's worked. Sometimes you have to go back to the drawing board and say, yeah, we've got all these extremely talented players we can put on the power play. But sometimes the simple way is the best way, and that's what I've seen. They're not, you know, they're not trying for that perfect play, that perfect goal. And you know, I mean, a lot of goals come off of rebounds. You know, you saw a couple of times last night when they had that explosion of all those power play goals where the Avalanche were kind of leaning towards the way, you know, oh, this is where the pass is going to go because they've seen the Leafs do it so many times. And instead the Leafs were, like I said, simplified it, put it on the net, look for rebounds. And I think that's the most effective way. I mean, you don't get extra points for artistic merit on the power play. You just get points if the puck goes in the net.
You know, Mike, I'm wondering, watching Austin Matthews' game last night, you know, watching his game against the Rangers, there are times, and I know this drives Leafs fans nuts because we expect our star players to be stars every night, but I think we almost have to accept, don't we, that there are going to be games where Austin Matthews, I mean, Austin Matthews isn't Wayne Gretzky. He is not going to get 4 points a night every night. Neither is he Eric Lindros. He is not going to go out and paste somebody into the boards every night. And, you know, one of the great things about Eric Lindros, and I know, look, you saw him more than I did when he was in his heyday. One of the great things about Eric Lindros is you could watch an Eric Lindros game and you would come away, you'd remember it because either he, one, had a bunch of points, or two, beat the hell out of somebody and hammered them into the boards. And quite often you'd sit back and look at the game and go, you know, Lindros really didn't do much. But there was that big hit, right? He always did one thing in a game. Yep. to make it to stand out. I think we have to come to the conclusion that at least right now, Austin Matthews is not that type of player. He's a big guy who is going to be taken out of games at times by the other team.
Yeah, and I think, you know what, especially during the regular season, to your point, Jeff, I think that people have to remember that. Where I'm going to kind of watch Austin Matthews' progression is the playoffs. I mean, we all know 2 points in 7 games last year. Some of that was going up against Patrice Bergeron, arguably the best defensive forward in the National Hockey League. But at the same time, you know what? You have to learn how to play against guys like that if you want success in the playoffs. So that is where I'm kind of intrigued, because you're going to have to, you know, there's less ice out there. It's harder to find those open spaces during the playoffs. And, you know, that's where I'm going to watch. How does he fight through this? Does he take that next step? And I think he is going to. I mean, what gets me about this kid, and I find it impressive, is the vision that he has and the creativity that he sees in front of him before he makes a play. For all the things that he did last night, the one that I kind of, you know, that wow moment was the scoop pass to Kapanen, where he just scooped it over everybody's head and Kapanen went in on the breakaway. I mean, I'm in Pittsburgh right now getting ready for the Oilers and the Penguins tonight, Sidney Crosby versus Connor McDavid. And so a bunch of us were watching the game yesterday, and one of my colleagues, when that happened, said, oh, that's like road hockey. Remember road hockey, mm-hmm. Jeff, where you'd have the one guy down at the end of their end? He used the term goal suck.
Yeah.
And I laughed because I haven't heard that in decades.
Goal suck, cherry picking.
Yep. And to have the creativity, you know, from back on your own side of center to see that and say, well, what's the best way I can get that? And just scoop it up like that. That just shows you that there's so many layers to Austin Matthews' game, and I think we're just going to see more and more of that as he progresses.
Yeah, and I think, look, I'm trying to remember when I first started hearing people talk about this. It might even have been last year where you started hearing there was sort of this creeping sense that, man, Austin Matthews is so big, you know, if only he used his body a little more, you know, and you'd hear it every now and then on some of the telecasts as well. get involved in some of the pushing and shoving after the play. Well, there's hardly any pushing and shoving after the play anymore. And my argument was always, look, I really don't want Austin Matthews collecting penalty minutes. I don't want him missing a game with a sore shoulder or two games because he's jammed his, you know, he's jammed his finger or his hand in a fight or something. I don't want that from Austin Matthews. And I think that sometimes we look at a guy, we look at his size, and we have a preconceived notion of how he is going to play, especially when he's a good player. And I think maybe we have to sit back a bit. I don't think Austin Matthews is anywhere near the finished product yet. I think there are aspects to his game, quite frankly, that we aren't going to see until the games really do matter.
No, and I agree. And from the physical aspect, what you want to see, you don't expect him to go in there on the forecheck and just, you know, wallpaper guys into the boards and stuff like that. What you want to see is he using his size to win puck battles? And that doesn't mean splattering people on the wall, okay? How does he – one thing that I don't think he gets enough credit for with his size is the way that he can shield the puck when he has it. Mm-hmm. Use his body to kind of block off the defenders while he is making plays. I think that's an underrated aspect of his game. And so when people say, oh, he doesn't play physical enough, there are aspects of his game where he does use his size. It just may be, as you pointed out earlier in the segment, not the way that maybe Eric Lindros did, but it can still be effective. And I agree with you. I don't think that we've even come close to seeing the finished product with Austin Matthews. And I think people forget sometimes, this is a 21-year-old kid. He is learning new things every time he's out on the ice. And you know what? I mean, I think we see that every day. I think we see a different Austin Matthews now than we saw 2 years ago when he was a rookie. But, you know, you score 4 goals in your first National Hockey League game, the bar of expectations, fairly or unfairly, kind of gets put pretty high right off the get-go.
Right, and you know, I'll even, and this is no disrespect to Patrick Marleau or to Kasperi Kapanen, but the other thing to keep in mind is, I mean, let's face it, Austin Matthews is not playing with the best winger in this team. He's not. And
no,
that's something else that needs to be said.
Yeah, but once again, you're talking about depth, and I think that you know, if the Leafs are struggling, and Mike Babcock did it a couple of years ago, he will put Mitch Marner on with Austin Matthews. But, you know, I'm kind of reminded of being in Pittsburgh here when the Penguins won their first of 2 Stanley Cups. Sidney Crosby, his wingers were 2 rookies, Connor mm-hmm. Geary and Brian Rust. And yep. They won a Stanley Cup that way because, Sidney, according to Sid, you know what? I mean, we can still be effective as a trio. But this frees up, you know, if Jenny Malkin's line and wherever Phil Kessel plays. And that's to your point that you started out this segment with about how this team can be successful because of the depth that it has and what Nazem, you know, echoing what Nazem Kadri says. So, you know, hey, let's look at it this way. Colorado has arguably the best power line in terms of offensive production in the National Hockey League. How successful have they been, you know, in the last little while? I mean, that team has been on a downward trend because there's not a lot of depth up front. They put all their guns on the same line a lot of times. I know they reshuffled them in and out. But sometimes it's good, you know, it's a luxury if you can sprinkle your talent through 3 or 4 lines. And I think the Maple Leafs have the advantage of doing that.
You know, another thing I'll say, too, is as you were talking, Mike, about the Penguins. You know, I was reminded of, you know, being a Blackhawks fan, the whole Taves and Kane thing. You know, back before the Hawks won those Stanley Cups, I mean, the argument in Chicago is, why isn't Joel playing them together night in and night out? And, you know, Yep. You're right. What did we see in the playoffs? Well, in the playoffs, sometimes they did play together when Joel Quenneville thought that the Blackhawks needed a little push. Sometimes he would put those guys together. And I guess in a lot of ways, it's never a bad thing, Mike, when your changeup, when the wrinkle you are adding as a head coach is you're putting your two best players together. You know what I mean? If that's the thing you're going to do to surprise a team, you know, guys, I've shuffled my lines, and guess what? Now for this shift, for this period, you've got my two best forwards together. That's not normally how it is. That's a changeup, and it's more effective in some ways than playing them together all the time and then making a move. You know what I mean? That's less of a surprise to the head coach.
Yeah, and we've seen Mike Sullivan do it here in Pittsburgh sometimes where he'll put Crosby and Malkin together, you know, two centers. He'll put Malkin on the wing. You know, I go I'll go further back from Taves and Kane. I can remember when the Red Wings were first gaining traction in the mid-90s, where Scotty Bowman would put Fedorov and Yzerman together. Once again,
yes,
two centers. But you know what? If you're down in an important game by a couple of goals with 10 minutes left, look out. Here comes the power line. So you know what? I mean, I think sometimes people are so infatuated by lines in hockey. You know what? A lot of these coaches, and I mentioned Scotty Bowman, who could be the mad shuffler when things weren't going bad. You know what? Lines can change within the first two or three shifts of a game, Jeff. I mean, nothing is etched in stone, and that's why, you know, you get a chance to put your two best players together. You can kind of save that for when you really need it.
What do you make of the decision to juggle the defense core after the first period last night? I mean, clearly and I think Mike Babcock was right in using altitude not as an excuse but as a reason for that slow first period. Look, we've all covered teams that have gone to Colorado, whether it's the hockey team, basketball team, even the baseball team, and the first game in altitude is different. It's tough. But the decision to shuffle the defense pairings a bit, you know, to put Ron Hainsey back with Morgan Riley and to shift Morgan Riley to the other side, or back to the other side, I should say. Do you see this as a long-term thing, or as Mike Babcock said after the game, is it something he's just, you know, he's just going to get as many looks as he can?
No, I think I think to his point, he's going to get as many looks as he can. And I think that's, you know what, that's imperative. If you want to be a successful coach, you have to have an idea, your finger on the pulse of the team. And there's going to be nights where some of the, you know, just like lines, the same goes with defense pairings. There's going to be nights where the guys just aren't cohesive together. And if a coach can understand that and goes back, you know, like you said, Hainsey and Riley have played together for a long time as well. We forget that Jake Muzzin's only been here for, 3 weeks. You know, you make your changes as the game goes on. And sometimes for successful coaches, it's as important of the in-game adjustments that you make as it is the way that you set your opening lineup. So I had no issues with what he did last night. I thought, you know, there were a little bit of struggles with the defense pairing. So why not do that while the game's still in hand and you have a chance to win? I thought it worked out pretty well for the Maple Leafs last night.
You are in Pittsburgh. You will see Mr. McDavid and Mr. Crosby at a head-to-head battle that never gets old. But at this point in time, too, I think given what's gone on in Edmonton this year for the past couple of years, Mike, it kind of... I think it bears answering this question. How long does Crosby and McDavid stay a thing if the Oilers stink?
Well, I wish I could answer that. I know Edmonton fans don't want to hear that perspective. The trouble is, you know, when you watch an Oilers game, And I was talking to a opposing general manager about this last night. The trouble is McDavid now, because he doesn't really have quality wingers that can keep up with him, pretty much has to go 200 feet to get scoring opportunities because they don't have guys that can feed him the puck off the rush.
Mm-hmm.
So what opposing teams are doing, they're lining five guys up on the blue line and say, okay, you get ahead of steam going. We know that nobody's going to pass you the puck or that you're not going to pass it to them. Try to get through us. And that's unfortunate just as a fan of hockey, because this kid is so talented. I remember having a sit down with Crosby at the beginning of November here in Pittsburgh, in which he said, in his opinion, Connor McDavid easily is the best player in the National Hockey League. But I think once again, we've seen, and to my earlier point about Crosby playing with Sheary and Rust, you've got to have the supporting cast, and Connor doesn't do that. Sometimes in basketball, one or two dominant players can lead to a successful team. But in hockey, it doesn't work that way. And unfortunately, for Connor McDavid, he's keeping up his level of play, but he just doesn't have that supporting cast. And it's going to be interesting to see how long he can bottle up his frustrations, because he has plenty of reason to be frustrated.